Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Just news coming into us here. Graeme Dwyer can move ahead with his appeal against his conviction for the murder of Elaine O'Hara in 2012. So the state consented to a dismissal of its appeal against the mobile phone data ruling in his favour. And it follows, as you know, Graeme Dwyer's victory in the Court of Justice of the EU, which confirmed that Ireland's system of retaining and accessing mobile phone metadata breached EU law. So it means now that he can move ahead with his appeal. And today, Sean Gearan, senior counsel for the state, asked the court to make orders by consent, including that order to dismiss the state's appeal. So let's see what happens next. It does seem, though, that he has been given permission to go ahead with that appeal. Families of the 21 victims of Tuesday's mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde in Texas are still coming to terms with the devastating news, and further details have emerged about the exact circumstances surrounding the shooting. Reports today say that frustrated onlookers urged police to charge into the school to stop the attack as it was going ahead. The massacre has reignited a long-running debate in the US on gun control, and Tipperary man Mark Kerwin is a police officer in Washington, D.C. and is on the line now. Mark, thanks very much for taking our call. We really appreciate it.
Good morning, Claire. Thank you.
So you can't foresee, despite what we saw unfolding over the last couple of days, you can't foresee any gun reform in the United States after this latest massacre.
I really can't, Claire. I don't see it in my lifetime or the next generation's lifetime. You know, in fact, looking at Texas, they've taken steps backwards. They've the most permissive gun law in the country. They've recently, in the last 10 years, passed legislation loosening the gun laws, where now anyone over the age of 21 doesn't actually even need a gun permit and can openly carry anywhere in the state. Mm-hmm. So it's a backward trend. And one of the issues is that, you know, the governor of Texas, he wants Texas to be a Second Amendment sanctuary state. And he looks at anyone who is an active shooter or uses a gun wrongfully as a crazy person, which is the completely wrong attitude to have. You know, there's two things really to take into review here. One is gun laws, and the second is the accessibility to guns. And the issue that we're having is that people aren't seeing the red flags, that there's not enough emphasis on mental health. And that's something that really needs to improve.
Yeah, I mean, I heard part of the governor's press conference, Greg Abbott, where he spoke again and again about mental health. But surely the problem is that an 18-year-old on the day of his birthday can walk into a Walmart and buy these rifles, these high-powered rifles that are weapons that you'd use in the heat of battle in a war situation. That's the problem, surely. We have mental health issues all over the world, but we don't have children getting shot in their classroom.
And that's my point, where one of the issues is accessibility to guns. You know, if you look at it, since there's been 1,536 people shot and killed in mass shootings, 950 shot and wounded. And a lot of people, there's a lot of sort of grey area here, because what is a mass shooting? A mass shooting is where four or more people have been shot, not including the shooter. If you look at it, 32% of shooters end their lives themselves by shooting themselves, by suicide. You know, one in three mass shooters were legally prohibited from possessing firearms at the time of the shooting. One of the common traits with mass shooters is that there is a history of trauma in their life. If you look at in Texas at the shooting, the 18-year-old used social media, which is also another thing which they're all doing. They're actually radicalizing themselves online. Being radicalized online by previous shooters, mass shooters. He said that he was going to kill his grandmother, which he did, or he shot her. He stole his grandmother's vehicle and said that he was going to an elementary school to shoot people. Mm-hmm. The other issue is training as well. I firmly believe that what's needed is a red flag law. And what I mean by that is, where a judge can make a decision to enforce local law enforcement officials to go in and take away guns from people who are a threat to themselves and to others.
Okay. Local police officers would make a call themselves if they feel concerned that somebody has a weapon who shouldn't have a weapon. But just can I talk to you about your own situation? Because this is a feature of your working life, isn't it? You come across these types of situations as a police officer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was on the active shooter team myself, which is, you know, we go through training in DC for active shooting twice a year. It's something that we've, for the last 15 years, more or less, we've taken very seriously, so much so that we've actually built an entire village inside of our academy where we train every year, where we have mock-like shops, schools, office buildings, and we train how to go into them, how to go and get the target. And years ago, people, when there was a shooting, the first thing you did when you entered a building was to attend to those who were hurt and injured. But as the years have gone on, our training now teaches us to go straight away and get the threat and eliminate the threat. So in other words, if I was to go into a building where there was someone lying down bleeding, I would step over them and try and reassure them I would be back. But my job is not to help and assist those who are wounded, but rather to go and eliminate the threat before they can kill more people or wound more.
And Mark, I'm sure you've been looking at the detail that has been emerging from this shooting in Uvalde. And I'm not sure if we're crystal clear on what exactly happened, but we do hear that there were parents outside, concerned citizens, as this thing was unfolding, urging law enforcement to go in and stop it. Are you any clearer on what happened over the course of those few hours?
Well, obviously the investigation is still taking place, and there are people who are, you know, emotionally distraught and maybe not thinking right. Everyone is just so emotionally distraught over this, especially those who witnessed it. And so I can't speak on behalf of the law enforcement that were outside, but I know it's a very small town. It's a 16,000 population town, very small police force. So I'm not sure what level of training that police force has had, but I can assure you that from my training, from the Metropolitan Police Department in DC, when an active shooter takes place, we go in as a team instantly, basically. As soon as we have enough people there, we've all been trained in and out, we know each other, and we will go in straight away to try to eliminate the threat. Mm-hmm. And not wait for what some people would consider or call a SWAT team or an emergency response team. Nowadays, every officer on the street is trained as an active shooter. So you no longer rely on a specialized team to come in and wait for them to come in. So I'm really not sure what locally they did. I do know that there were several different agencies that came in and eliminated the threat. But I can't speak on behalf of the local department, you know.
Yeah, I know that. But you can imagine what they were facing. You know, this guy barricading himself into a classroom with all those children and the teachers, and you as the law enforcement officer, you've got a choice to make.
Well, you also have to realise, Claire, when you have such a small community, a small population in that town, that probably some of the law enforcement that were standing outside have either, you know, kids in that school, wives, husbands as teachers in that school. Everyone knew each other there. It was so small, such a small community. So it's a bit different than a major city, every situation is so different, you know. I attended the Navy Yard shooting in September 16th on 2013, where a shooter went in the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. and killed 13 people. There's no two that are the same. And one of the issues we have now is the person acting alone? Or, you know, because we're getting too familiarized with these shootings. So we need to, every time there's a shooting, sadly, we need to deeply analyze it and see, you know, what are the changes? Are they copycat shooters? Or if there is someone else working with them, well, then you're going after one threat and there could be another threat in another business.
You know, you touched on something there as somebody who was part of a response to that Navy Yard shooting. The people who were in that classroom, the survivors of this attack on Tuesday, they will live with this for the rest of their lives. It's not something that you can recover from. And I know we've had statements, interviews from the survivors of Sandy Hook 10 years ago who've been speaking this week after this incident in Texas. And it's really clear the lasting effect that this has.
Claire, the difference is that these kids were primary school kids, and some of them can't even, they can't even dissolve what's happened. They can't mentally accept it. They're going to be scarred for life. There is no doubt about it. It is disgusting. It's so sad. All of the other previous school shootings that have taken place in the US, they've been older kids, secondary schools, colleges, universities. But these are small hands of these kids out there, you know, they're just tiny little kids, and they've witnessed the worst thing possible. They're never going to be right for the rest of their lives.
Mark, it's good to talk to you. Mark Carwin, Tipperary native and Washington, D.C. police officer there, joining us on that desperately sad story. And as I'm talking to Mark, I'm seeing on the American TV channels the photographs of those children as they're identified. And it is just heartbreaking.